A Thanksgiving Day Sermon by Reverend Richard A. Rem, preached at Christ Community Church in Spring Lake, Michigan, on November 22, 1990, entitled, No Gratitude on Demand. The scripture reading is Psalm 116. Copyright, Grand Valley State University.
When your life has been tangibly touched by grace, gratitude will rise like sap in a tree. When you have experienced being deeply loved, your soul will sing praise as surely as the surf sings as it seeks the shore. But there is no gratitude on demand. There is no coercion in the grace of Thanksgiving. Today, Thanksgiving Day 1990, and it's good to be together. But as we worship and give God thanks, it must be apparent to us that there is no gratitude on demand. The touch of grace, the experience of love, the taste of joy, these things cause gratitude to rise in our hearts, but it comes no other way. No gratitude on demand. Did you ever have one of your little ones staring sternly at a plate of spinach and say with a note of scolding in your voice, "You ought to be thankful. There are millions of little children that never have enough to eat." Or if not spinach, maybe it was peas or squash. Well, it didn't work on you, did it? And it doesn't work even on those of us on whom it didn't work who try to work it on the next generation. There is just no gratitude on demand. It doesn't work that way. When the life has been touched, broken open, placed in the sunlight of God's love and grace, then praise is irrepressible. Then thanksgiving is as natural as the rising of the maple sap in the tree in early spring. But until such happens, gratitude may be demanded, probably can be expected, ought to be offered, but it simply will not happen. Life is simply that way. The President's proclamation that on this day, November 22, 1990, the nation ought to be grateful is really a wonderful national custom, and I think the day is well worth observing. We observe Thanksgiving Day one day in the year, not in order that we might gather all of our gratitude into one day of the year, but in order that gratitude might flow into all of our days. And certainly there is something valuable in cultivating the grace of thanksgiving. There's wisdom in the old hymn, "Count your many blessings, name them one by one, and it will surprise you what the Lord has done." But the fact remains, you ought to be thankful, just won't do it. The psalmist was thankful. Many of the psalms are magnificent expressions of praise and thanksgiving. Psalm 116, read a moment ago, is such a psalm. It is the story of a life that had been cast into deep anguish, had experienced marvelous deliverance, and was pledged to live to the praise of God ever after. In his commentary on the Psalms, Walter Brueggemann says that there is so much of genuine human experience in the Psalms because they are so reflective of life. Life is not one steady plateau of sameness. Brueggemann suggests that the Psalms can be put into three categories. There are Psalms of orientation, expressions of praise to God in those seasons when it seems that all is well and all is at rest. There are Psalms of disorientation, when it seems that the heavens have fallen in and the earth given way, and we see only darkness and experience only anguish. And then there are Psalms of new orientation, when suddenly the darkness is scattered by the dawn of light, and we are surprised by joy. Psalm 116 is a psalm of new orientation, for the psalmist comes out of the depths into the light to experience the overwhelming sense of thanksgiving to God for God's grace and mercy. But the insight that I appreciate of Brueggemann is the fact that life is not generally for very long in a state of orientation, or, thank God, disorientation, or even new orientation. Rather, life is a dynamic flow, and we are always moving from orientation to disorientation to new orientation. Life has its light and its shadow. Life has its love and its loss. It has its hurt and its healing. And we ought not to mask over the fact that to live is difficult. Human experience is perilous. And it's not simply a smooth ride and a constant sameness. We crave security. We would love to be able to wall ourselves in and protect us from all darkness out, but it is not that way. Our lives are constantly being played upon by those positive and negative forces that are simply a reality of the human experience. And it is in that movement that we cry to the Lord. And that movement from orientation to the sudden disruption, the disorientation, there is the cry to God for mercy, plea for rescue. And then that movement from disorientation to new orientation, there is this marvelous expression of thanksgiving and gratitude. That's simply the way it is, and that's the way life is, and there's no thanksgiving on demand. It rises when we are surprised by joy, overwhelmed by love, and touched by grace. Well, that being the case, how ought we to live? You can't just concoct these kinds of situations. The psalmist gave this marvelous expression because he says, after the exclamation, "I love the Lord," "I love the Lord because He heard my cry. He bowed down to my supplication. I was in deep anguish and the Lord delivered me. He saved my soul from death, my eyes from tears, my feet from stumbling. What shall I render unto the Lord for all of His bounty to me?" Obviously, it's welling up within him. You can't cork gratitude. It will simply burst forth in a great shower of praise. But you can't concoct that. But as a matter of fact, you don't have to concoct that. Because if we are honest, our lives are always in movement. From orientation, just got it all neat and tidy, just got it all figured out, just able to see down the years and call all the plays so it would all work out and we'd live happily ever after, and then bang. And then in the midst of the darkness, when we would despair and give up, having lost all hope, suddenly a light surprises a Christian when she sings or prays or simply waits on the Lord. You can't concoct it, but if you wait long enough, you'll probably come through the kinds of experiences that will wring from you a cry for mercy and ultimately bring you to an expression of irrepressible praise to God, so that you can too say from the depths of your being, I love the Lord because. So how then ought we to live? Well, there are a couple of options, I think. And I suppose that those options are always at war within us. It's not like there are two kinds of people in the world, but there are two kinds of people within us. There's that cautious person, that person that would always color within the lines, would always step very carefully, never really risking anything, always holding oneself back a bit, keeping oneself in check, never loving too deeply, never caring too broadly, Never exposing oneself, never hanging one's heart out, sort of like the little child when perhaps a privilege has been removed who says with a pout, I don't care. I don't even care. Oh, yes, we care. We care so deeply, but if we could only convince ourselves that we didn't really care, then we would be protecting ourselves from being deeply hurt, wouldn't we? There is that cautious way to live. Living, after all, is dangerous. Life is perilous. Life is difficult. You can get hurt if you love. You can lose if you risk. And so, walk softly. Keep to the middle of the road. Don't dream. Don't grasp for the stars. For what you don't desire, you can never be disappointed in not receiving. But that is to live a truncated human existence. That is not really to live. Let me suggest a better option. It is to live with sheer abandon, to live with zest, to live with gusto, to risk all, to go for it. And I suggest that because I believe only thus will our full human potential be realized, and I suggest it not simply as an exercise in recklessness, but rather because it seems to me that that's the way God would have us live if we would emulate God. For think of God for a moment. God created the heavens and the earth, and He created humankind. He sent the stars in space and the planets spinning, and He created the likes of you and me, only hoping that we would love and respond to His love and grace in return. What a risk He took. He risked and He lost. He gambled. And it was disastrous. And so, of course, God simply blew up the experiment. God simply tossed in the towel, threw in the sponge, gave up on us, didn't He? Of course He didn't. Because God, who dared enough and loved enough to create something over against Himself in order to love it and to give Himself to it, hoping that it would be in turn responded to, and that He would be loved in return, this God who gambled all in creating us and turning us loose, banking on our response, finally came to the point of simply waiting and weeping while we went our way, Jesus told the story of the prodigal son, which I suppose is as close to a revelation of the heart of God as anything ever said. The son who takes his inheritance and goes off into the far country, breaks the father's heart, but the father lets him go. Not even a word of recrimination. And the son goes out and ruins himself, brings destruction upon his life. Finally coming to himself to return with his speech ready for the father. And what does the father do? He rises, runs, embraces. Well, we could have rewritten that. Sometimes I think in the church we do rewrite that. That's a dangerous parable. How much better if we had rewritten it for Jesus? If Jesus had known that down the centuries we would be an institution that needed responsible response to grace, then Jesus might have told the story differently. Then he might have had the Father rise with all of his dignity and say, I see your home. Well, I could have told you it would come to this. In fact, I did. And now, yes, well, there probably is an empty bunk out in the bunkhouse. And for a couple of years, if you work hard and keep your nose clean, we'll have a conference again. You see, Jesus was before the church. Well, he wasn't really, was he? It was the church that did him in, wasn't it? The church that finds the radical grace of God news too good to believe and too risky to proclaim. We demand gratitude. Gratitude on demand is the only thing that will work in the church because we have an institution. And tomorrow we'll commit ourselves to debt reduction over the next 15 years. And you ought to be grateful. This marvelous, marvelous place, this wonderful ministry, this experience we have together, you ought to be grateful. Grace is free, but response is expected. Ah, dear friends, thank God for responsible lay leaders in this church who keep bridling this silly minister in. Thank God for responsible lay leadership in this church that understands that there is an institution that needs to be maintained in an ongoing fashion. Thank God for mature Christian people who have made a genuine response to the goodness and mercy of God and who keep us afloat. Thank God for those that are wiser than I am, who continue to tell me that I have to tell you that grace demands gratitude. But how can I tell you that grace demands gratitude when grace doesn't demand anything? Grace gives and gives and gives. And I hope there will be enough fools out there to join me in responding to such a foolish God whose prodigal love knows no limit, who is obscenely an incurable lover. I thank God for those of you who are responsible. I want to say that there are a couple dangers to those of us who are responsible. One is that we could begin to think that it all depends on us, and a kind of subtle self-righteousness can infect our soul. And there's perhaps even a worse threat, and that is that Those of us who are responsible will get irritated with those who aren't responsible. And the moment you get irritated with those who aren't responsible, you lose your joy. And when you lose your joy, you've lost it all. Just no gratitude on demand. But when you think of God and the risk God took, when you think of the steadfast love of the Lord, when you think of the extent to which God was willing to go in order to get through to us, that all God wants to do is love us, then when the steamroller hits you, when the lights go out, and you remember God, then you wait. Wait until the dawn rises. The God who will save your soul from death and your eyes from tears and your feet from stumbling. Then you'll say, what shall I render unto the Lord for all of His bounty to me? I really like God. I really like God. Don't you really like God? I like Him a lot. Or her. I can understand the psalmist who just couldn't keep quiet but had to say, I love the Lord.